You're listening to Feedback with Bill Saunders on News Talk 830 WEEU and 830WEEU.com. A new generation of talk.
For the Monday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky. And our phone numbers here are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. Our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. And our email address is feedback at 830weeu.com. I think I've covered every corner there as to how you can communicate with us on this Monday morning. So let's take a look and see what today's top three topics are. Why not? Governor Shapiro wants to make changes to the state's school assessment tests to allow for more learning time. Among other things, we'll talk about what he's proposing. Chicago's black community is reacting to the treatment illegal migrants are getting from that city. And Democrats want to strip Donald Trump of Secret Service protection if he is convicted. All right, with that said, let's start off with the governor's proposal to make some changes to that standardized test that students all dread. I know I dreaded it when I was in school. But according to politicspa.com, Governor Shapiro late last week announced changes to the state's system of school assessments that will reduce the amount of time students spend taking standardized tests. It'll also mitigate stress, the governor says, and anxiety around testing by adopting question types that match how students learn, help teachers spend more time teaching, and save the Commonwealth millions of dollars. Shapiro is responding to Pennsylvania students, parents, and teachers about the burden standardized testing places on them by following through on his promise to reduce reliance on those tests and ensure students and teachers have the flexibility they need to be successful. The Shapiro administration's three-part plan to update the state's standardized testing system includes implementing online testing over the next 2 years, adopting question types that allow students to use methods they're already familiar with, such as drag and drop, sorting and ranking, and graphic manipulation, and developing a free, optional benchmark assessment tool for schools to help educators better understand whether students are on track to succeed on year-end exams. Online testing has several significant advantages over the current paper tests, including saving the Commonwealth nearly $7 million annually upon full implementation. The move to digital testing will also have significant environmental impacts, saving nearly 85 million printed pages annually and reducing the Commonwealth's carbon footprint through the reduction of printing, packaging, and shipping, the governor says. Additionally, online testing will ensure schools get results faster. Schools currently receive scoring reports throughout the summer months, making it difficult to use them for decision-making in student scheduling, course content alignment, and resource allocation. District educators already overworked and wearing multiple hats will save significant time by switching to online testing, ranging from 10 to 20 hours in small schools to dozens of hours or even days in larger schools. Taken together with the move to online testing, the Shapiro administration's reforms could save students up to 30 minutes per test. For students who are taking multiple tests in a single year, that could mean up to 2 hours of time spent learning rather than testing. And I know that's always been an issue with those standardized tests. And the critics have all said that it forces teachers to teach to the tests. And I tend to agree with that. Standardized testing has never been my favorite. I know how anxious I was when I had to take the SATs, and I took it twice. in my junior year and my senior year, as well as the ACT test. I don't know if the ACT test is still taken or not in schools. Do you recall, Sean, if that was?
Yeah, I know it's still taken. I never took the ACT because when I was in high school, it was relayed to me. I was like, oh, ACT's more of a test if you want to go into more something along the lines of STEM. I knew in high school I wasn't going to do – like, I knew in high school I wanted to be something with journalism. So
gotcha.
I talked to my advisor about it, and he said, no, you shouldn't really have to take it. I did take the SAT twice, though. I took it once with the essay and once without. And I think I did fairly well. Like, nothing mind-blowing, not like a super high score, but I thought I did pretty well, at least, especially on the English and reading comprehension side.
Were you anxious? Did that cause anxiety for you to take those tests, to prepare for them?
Yeah, I never liked taking tests in any level, like elementary, middle, high school, college. I never liked it.
Any test, you mean?
I didn't like it. But for standardized tests, yeah, because, again, I went to Catholic school, so we didn't really have to do those standardized tests. I forget what they're called. The Keystones, I believe, is what they're called here.
The PSA.
Yeah, we never had to take them. We took something else, I remember. We took something called, like, I think it was called, like, the Iowa's test or something like that. I know we took those a couple of times.
Okay.
So those are the really only standardized tests I had to take. I didn't like them, but, I mean, that was also parlayed to us as, like, this isn't going to really account for a grade or anything. It's just going to show you know, where you're at and whatnot. So I wasn't really anxious for those. But for the SAT, yeah, I guess I was, because that's, you know, that's kind of drilled in. Like, that is a big part of, you know, trying to get into college. And I don't think it's that way anymore. Like, I don't, from what I hear from some people, like, the SAT is not the biggest end-all, be-all if you get into a school or not.
Right.
And I don't think that was the case with me with getting into West Virginia. But, yeah, no, there was a bit of anxiety there because I guess the reputation of the SAT is just so large. That's like, oh, well, it's a pretty important test. It's going to count for, you know, a grade in high school, but it's like, it could determine whether or not you get into a school you want, or if, you know, you could get a scholarship, stuff like that. So, yeah, there was definitely a bit of anxiety there.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure involved with those tests.
Yeah.
I keep reading different things. In one respect, I'm hearing that more and more colleges are doing away with SAT requirements. And then again, I'm reading other things that are saying they're going back to that. So I don't really know where they stand at this point. Any listener out there who knows otherwise, please feel free to call in and let us know.
Yeah, when I went through the whole process of applying for college, a lot of it was – it moved to – this one website, the college application, something like that. I forget the name of it, but it was like through one website where you did all of your applications. And there was always an option of, oh, do you want to include your SAT score or not? But again, like in high school also, we took the practice SAT. If you weren't taking the SAT, that was like one day every year that we had to take that. So it was just drilled in us, you should just take the SAT anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love to hear from parents whose kids are in school or were in school. Let me know what you felt as a parent for your child with taking the SATs and how your children felt about taking the SATs. I'd love to get input on that as well. Well, speaking of schools, got this out of the Reading Eagle this morning. So property owners in Reading, listen up. The Reading School District may have to increase the property tax rate in order to balance its upcoming school year's budget, according to administrators. The Eagle is reporting that the district's assessment base has been relatively stable without a significant amount of growth, both in residential and commercial activity, that could increase tax revenue. So explained Wayne Garris, who happens to be the chief financial officer for the district, and he's quoted in this piece as saying the following. When you have a flat or declining assessment base, if you need to raise additional resources, the only way to do that really is through tax increases to existing taxpayers, unless there's a significant increase in the state funding to offset that. Again, that's Wayne Garris who's quoted in that piece. And that's not something the district can count on at this time, meaning the state increasing its funding level. Garris says the budget committee is recommending a 4% millage increase, bringing the rate to 18.65 from the current 17.93 mills. Now, what does that mean for a homeowner with a property assessed at $100,000? It means you would pay a tax bill of $1,865. The district's current rate of 17.93 mills is the lowest school property tax rate in the county, according to this article that appears in the Eagle. Do I want to do this now? Let's take a commercial break, because this is a change in subject. But what I'm going to share with you next is a prediction on the upcoming hurricane season. Every year they make predictions around this time of year, just before the hurricane season starts, which officially begins on June 1st. Yeah, we'll take a look and see what they're predicting for this year when feedback continues on this Monday morning.
News you can use.
I feel more informed when I listen.
News Talk 830, WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback on this Monday morning here on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond. By the way, coming up this week, tomorrow in fact, I've got U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. joining us during the 10 o'clock hour. He'll be calling in at around 10:15 tomorrow morning. And then on Wednesday at 11 o'clock, folks from Safe Berks will be here to talk about how they help victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And so that's what's coming up this week here on Feedback on WEEU. All right, well, get ready for one of the busiest Atlantic hurricane seasons on record, forecasters are saying. I got this from the Philadelphia Inquirer this morning. The 2024 Atlantic hurricane season is likely to be destructive and costly and has the potential to be one of the busiest on record, the Inquirer is reporting. That's the consensus of at least four major forecasting services, all of whom point to conditions in the tropical Pacific and in the Atlantic hurricane formation zone that are ripe for a tropical storm harvest. The latest to join the chorus were the meteorologists who assembled the outlook for the Weather Channel, who late last week called for 24 named storms, those with winds of 39 miles an hour or higher, and 11 hurricanes with winds of at least 74 miles an hour. Of those, six are forecast to be major hurricanes, with peak winds of 111 miles an hour or higher. The long-term averages are 14 named storms and seven hurricanes, with three of those being major. The Weather Channel Outlook has a copy-and-paste similarity to forecasts issued in the last few weeks by AccuWeather, the Colorado State University Tropical Meteorology Project, and Tropical Storm Risk, which is a British firm. Record high sea surface temperatures have persisted in the Atlantic hurricane spawning grounds, and as of Thursday, they were running several degrees above normal levels, according to NOAA data. Human-caused climate change certainly is a factor, reports the Inquirer, with natural variability likely a contributor, and cleaner air, researchers say. Yeah, they're blaming cleaner air for a higher risk for hurricanes this year. Amy Clement, a professor and researcher at the University of Miami's School of Marine, Atmospheric, and Earth Science, is among those who have noted that erasing veils of pollutants has enhanced the amount of solar energy reaching the surface. So we can't win. You know, we humans pollute the environment, and we're accused of causing these major storms. Now, the climate scientists are saying that even when we clean the air and get rid of those pollutants, that allows for more solar energy, solar heating, to enter our atmosphere and create conditions that are ripe for major hurricanes. Go figure, huh? While obviously cleaning up the air is a good thing, said Colorado State hurricane specialist Philip Klotzbach, it has likely helped fuel the more active Atlantic hurricane seasons that we've seen in recent years. Oh, they can't make up their minds, can they? Heat is fuel for hurricanes. The Atlantic was quite warm last season, but conditions of the Pacific may have had some mitigating effects. And the tropical storm season, although active in terms of raw storm numbers, wasn't especially ferocious. The evolving state of the tropical Pacific will end up constituting the biggest difference between the 2023 and 2024 seasons, forecasters say. The El Niño warming, which covered a vast expanse of the equatorial Pacific and typically generates west-to-east upper air winds that had a shearing effect on would-be tropical storms in the Atlantic basin, is now waning. Its mirror opposite, the La Niña cooling, is likely to develop in time for the peak hurricane season, says the government's Climate Prediction Center. La Niña tends to have dampening effects on those shearing winds. In short, say hurricane forecasters, a cool Pacific and a warm Atlantic could brew trouble for the Caribbean and the Gulf and Atlantic coasts. That's not a done deal, though. Concentrations of storm-repelling Saharan dust in the atmosphere have been especially pronounced this year, said Klotzbach, and that could at least slow down the start of the season, which begins officially on June 1st. All right, so I'm going to tack this on the wall. I'm definitely going to keep this article handy, and we'll refer back to it in November when this year's hurricane season comes to an end and see how accurate their predictions were. Well, speaking of meteorologists, one at least is warning that weather wars could crop up between countries. I got this from Newsweek. The headline of their article is "Meteorologist Warns of Weather Wars Between Countries." So listen up to this. See what he's saying here. A meteorologist has warned of potential weather wars between countries if cloud seeding gets out of hand. The comments follow torrential rain in Dubai, the UAE, which caused extreme flooding there. The downpour, which began on Monday, that was 2 weeks ago, brought widespread disruption, closing schools, flooding homes, and delaying travel. More than 142 millimeters of rain fell on the city in just 24 hours, equivalent to at least a year's worth of rain for the region there. In recent days, there have been theories that the torrential rain was caused by cloud seeding, when planes inject clouds with chemicals, sparking precipitation. The practice was introduced in the 1940s and is now only used in areas with little rainfall, such as the UAE. But experts can't agree whether cloud seeding was responsible in this case, and it has caused some debate in the weather community. Johann Jacques, a senior meteorologist at environmental technology company Kisters, believes there could be unintended consequences when technology is used to alter the weather. He even thinks there could be diplomatic consequences and subsequent weather wars. He went on to say in a statement, "Cloud seeding aims to enhance and accelerate the precipitation process, especially in areas which have not seen any rain over a long time. Such intense precipitation can lead to infiltration excess flow, with potential flash floods as a result. The Dubai floods act as a stark warning of the unintended consequences we can unleash when we use such technology to alter the weather," he says. He went on to add, "Additionally, we have little control over the aftermath of cloud seeding. Where exactly is it going to be raining effectively? Using techniques such as cloud seeding to bring much-needed rainfall in one area can cause flash floods and droughts in another. There is no evidence to suggest that these rains were caused by cloud seeding. In fact, experts have come forward and they've stated that it is unlikely. But Jacques continues to warn about interfering with natural weather patterns." Now, why am I bringing this up? Not only because this is a current article, but because there are scientists now who want to use cloud seeding to try and circumvent or help alleviate climate change. And again, whenever scientists or anybody messes around with Mother Nature, they tend to create more problems than they try to solve here. And this is a classic example of that. Well, Jacques went on to say in this time, anytime we interfere with natural precipitation patterns, we set off a chain of events that we have little control over. He went on to say, while there is a lot we know, there is still a lot we don't, and there are still plenty of gaps in our understanding of these complex weather systems. Now, not only can you apply that to science, but how about in the form of deadly diseases? Let's see now. Was there anything that was recent that where scientists went overboard with their research? Oh, yes. That's right. COVID-19. Yeah. We've got the people like Dr. Fauci, who tells us we must follow the science. Yeah, the mad scientist, that is. So that's an article that appears in Newsweek. And it is a warning that I hope other scientists will heed, but one never knows, do they? So I'll keep up on that and keep you updated where they stand with these efforts to try and circumvent any effects of climate change by seeding clouds. Not saying that they did that for climate change in UAE. As the article pointed out, they did it there because they don't get much rain. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about immigration, shall we? And what Home Depot is doing, at least the Home Depot up in New York, or some Home Depot stores in New York. I got this from the New York Post. They're reporting that a New York Home Depot has deployed a guard dog, and other stores may be close behind to protect shoppers from aggressive migrants and thieves flooding their parking lots. Two men wearing MSA security caps and bulletproof vests with a German Shepherd in tow patrolled the Home Depot in New Rochelle last Tuesday. It's more about omnipresence, one guard said, explaining that the company was contracted a few weeks ago. He said it's not like we let them go bite anyone or anything, meaning the dogs, that is. The guard said the store hired them for a number of reasons. It's not just because of migrants, but because of a myriad of other things, too, like people breaking into cars, that kind of stuff, the guard said. The guarded New Rochelle lot was quiet, and no migrants loitered there when the Post visited last week. However, 7 miles away in Throgs Neck, the Bronx, at least 30 male migrants hovered at the doors of Home Depot. Some were day laborers, simply there trying to get work from local contractors. But many others aggressively confronted shoppers, trying to sell them phony Apple AirPods or soliciting tips for lifting items from shopping carts into cars, even when uninvited. The New York Post article goes on to say, customers frequently complain about the crush of migrants, said Laurie Ann Masciato, who works in the store's customer service department. She went on to say, it's come to the point where they're invading personal space, touching people's belongings, just harassing. I get it, she says. You're trying to make a buck. But when it becomes aggressive and harassing, there's a major issue. Well, the article goes on to say that her husband went 4 miles away to the Pelham Gardens location in the Bronx earlier this month, and he got mobbed there too, she said. Home Depot corporate spokeswoman Margaret Smith said the company prohibits loitering and solicitation at its stores and regularly works with law enforcement. She wouldn't say if the Bronx stores will add security, including dogs. Now, I haven't seen that as a problem at the Home Depots down my way, but this primarily is an issue up there in parts of New York, at least. Well, speaking of illegal migrants, there's a problem in Chicago. This I got from the Associated Press. The closure of Wadsworth Elementary School back in 2013 was a blow to residents of the majority black neighborhood it served, symbolizing a city indifferent to its interests. So when the city reopened Wadsworth last year to shelter hundreds of migrants without seeking community input, it added insult to injury, reports the AP. Across Chicago, black residents are frustrated that long-standing needs are not being met, while the city's newly arrived are cared for with a sense of urgency and with their tax dollars. Genesis Young, a lifelong Chicagoan who lives near Wadsworth, said the following to AP, "Our voices are not valued nor heard." Chicago is one of several big American cities grappling with a surge of migrants. The Republican governor of Texas has been sending them by the busload to highlight his grievances with the Biden administration's immigration policy. To manage the influx, Chicago has already spent more than $300 million of city, state, and federal funds to provide housing, health care, education, and more to over 38,000 mostly South American migrants who have arrived in the city since 2022, desperate for help. The speed with which these funds were marshaled has stirred widespread resentment among Black Chicagoans. But community leaders are trying to ease racial tensions there and channel the public's frustrations into agitating for the greater good. The outcry over migrants in Chicago and other large Democrat-led cities is having wider implications in this election year. The Biden administration is now advocating a more restrictive approach to immigration in its negotiations with Republicans in Congress. Since the Wadsworth building reopened as a shelter, Young has felt extreme anxiety because of the noise, loitering, and around-the-clock police presence that came with it. More than anything, she and other neighbors say it is a reminder of problems that have been left unresolved for years, including high rates of crime, unemployment, and homelessness. Charlotte Jackson, owner of a bakery and restaurant in the South Loop neighborhood of Chicago, is quoted in this AP piece as saying, "I definitely don't want to seem insensitive to them and them wanting a better life," meaning the illegal migrants. "However, if you can all of a sudden come up with all these millions of dollars to address their housing, why didn't you address the homeless issue here?" Good question, Charlotte. Let me know when you get an answer. Meanwhile, Chicago's mayor, Brandon Johnson, declined to comment for the story. The city received more than $200 million from the state and federal government to help care for migrants after Johnson appealed to Illinois Governor J.P. Pritzker and President Biden. The president plans to be in Chicago in August to make his reelection pitch at the 2024 Democratic National Convention. Well, some Black Chicagoans are protesting the placement of shelters in their neighborhoods, but others aim to turn the adversity into an opportunity. The Reverend Jeanette C. Wilson, who is National Executive Director of the civil rights group Push for Excellence, is quoted in this AP story as saying, "Chicago is a microcosm to the rest of the nation. Black communities have faced discrimination and underinvestment for decades and are justifiably frustrated," she says. "The attention the migrants are receiving is deserved," she added, "but it's also a chance for cities to reflect on their responsibility to all underserved communities." Wilson said there is a moral imperative to take care of everybody. After nearly 2 years of acrimony, the city has begun to curb some accommodations for migrants, which has caused its own backlash. The city last month started evicting migrants who overstayed a 60-day limit at shelters, prompting condemnation from immigrant rights groups and from residents worried about public safety. Love to get your assessment of that story when feedback continues on this Monday morning. Thank you for making us part of your day today.
Serving Collegeville, North Wales, King of Prussia, and all of Montgomery County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. Well, not only did we just share with you prior to going to the commercial break how illegal migrants, with the help of taxpayer dollars, are getting shelter here in the United States and not having to pay for it at all, comes this article, another one from the Associated Press, that reads the following. The most significant case in decades on homelessness has reached the Supreme Court as record numbers of people in America are without a permanent place to live. The justices today will consider a challenge to rulings from a California-based appeals court that found punishing people for sleeping outside when shelter space is lacking amounts to unconstitutional, cruel, and unusual punishment. Yes, California and Oregon, too, are considering fining homeless people simply for sleeping outdoors in their lovely cities. A political class section of officials in the West and California, home to nearly one-third of the nation's homeless population, argue those decisions have restricted them from common-sense measures intended to keep homeless encampments from taking over public parks and sidewalks. Advocacy groups say the decisions provide essential legal protections, especially with an increasing number of people forced to sleep outdoors as the cost of housing soars. The case before the Supreme Court comes from Grants Pass. That's a small city nestled in the mountains of southern Oregon, where rents are rising and there is just one overnight shelter for adults. As a growing number of tents clustered its parks, the city banned camping and set $295 fines for people sleeping there, fining people who are homeless. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals largely blocked the camping ban under its finding that it is unconstitutional to punish people for sleeping outside when there is not adequate shelter space. Grants Pass appealed to the Supreme Court, arguing the ruling left it few good options. It really has made it impossible for cities to address growing encampments, and they're unsafe, unhealthy, and problematic for everyone, especially those who are experiencing homelessness, said lawyer Theanne Evangelos, who is representing Grants Pass. The city is also challenging a 2018 decision known as Martin versus Boise that first barred camping bans when shelter space is lacking. It was issued by the San Francisco-based Ninth Circuit and applies to the nine western states in its jurisdiction. The Supreme Court declined to take up a different challenge to the ruling back in 2019 before the solidification of its current conservative majority. If the decision is overturned, advocates say it would make it easier for cities to deal with homelessness by arresting and fining people rather than helping them get shelter and housing. Love to get your take on that story. Oh, let's talk a little bit about Title IX. Yeah, the Biden administration is making some changes to Title IX, which is meant to add protections for women, girls in school. Now they want to include protections for transgenders. I got this from the Washington Times. The Biden administration on Friday released its long-awaited overhaul of Title IX, inserting gender identity into the watershed civil rights amendment aimed at eliminating discrimination against girls and women in education. Nearly 2 years in the making, the Education Department's final rule builds on the legacy of Title IX by extending protections to transgender students, meaning the 52-year-old law, hailed for advancing educational opportunities for women, will now include biological males who identify as female. The rule prohibits discrimination and harassment based on sexual orientation, gender identity, and sex characteristics in federally funded education programs, applying the reasoning of the Supreme Court's ruling in Bostock versus Clayton County, so said the Education Department fact sheet. The final rule takes effect August 1st. The department stressed that the regulations do not address transgender eligibility in scholastic sports, which will be covered in a separate rule expected to be released when? Yeah, conveniently after the presidential election in November. Speaking of that, here's another story that I got from the Washington Times. It was a week to remember for West Virginia track and field athlete Becky Pepper Jackson, but not so much for the girls competing against the transgender teen. Yes, Pepper Jackson is a transgender. the Bridgeport Middle School 8th grader won the Girls Shot Put event Thursday at the Harrison County Middle School Championships, trouncing the second-placed girls throw by more than 3 feet. Pepper Jackson also placed second in the discus. Now, as I've said in the past, is this fair to those who are born females who are trying to succeed in sports? Those podium performances were made possible by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled last Tuesday by a 2-1 vote in favor of Pepper Jackson's lawsuit challenging the state's 2021 law barring male-born athletes from female scholastic sports. Female athletes upset about competing against biological males who identify as the opposite sex typically grin and bear it lest they be accused of transphobia, but not this time. Five girls from Lincoln Middle School engaged in a silent protest by stepping into the circle when it was their turn to compete, and then stepping out without making a throw, as reported by OutKick, which posted video of the protest, and good for them. The official record from the competition held at Liberty High School in Clarksburg showed that five Lincoln students received an ND, or no distance, in the event. One of the Lincoln girls also posted an ND in the discus, as shown on athletic.net. The Bridgeport team won the meet with 190 points, edging second-place Lincoln, which had 180 points. Former University of Kentucky swimmer Riley Gaines, who hosts OutKick's Gaines on Girls, congratulated the girls for taking a stand on the case. And here's what she's quoted as saying. This comes just 2 days after the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals blocked the West Virginia law that says you must compete in the category that matches your sex. Gaines said that on X, formerly known as Twitter. She went on to say in her post, it's a sad day when 13 or 14-year-old girls have to be the adults in the room, but I couldn't be more inspired by and proud of them. She added, enough is enough, the tide is turning. I hope she's right. The appeals court rejected West Virginia's bid to enforce its Save Women's Sports Law, which requires students to compete based on their biological sex, keeping in place a February 2023 injunction and sending the case back to the district court. Pepper Jackson, who's 13 years of age, began identifying as a girl in third grade and started taking puberty blockers in 2010 after being diagnosed with gender dysphoria. The teen is also receiving gender-affirming hormone therapy, according to legal documents. U.S. Court of Appeals Judge Toby Haytens said that requiring Pepper Jackson to compete against boys would expose her to the same risk of unfair competition, and in some sports, physical danger, from which the defendants claim to be shielding cisgender girls. The defendants cannot expect that PBJ, meaning Pepper Jackson in this case, will counterman her social transition, her medical treatment, and all the work she's done with her schools, teachers, and coaches for nearly half her life by introducing herself to teammates, coaches, and even opponents as a boy, the judge said. By the way, the judge is a Biden appointee. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey vowed to keep fighting to protect women's sports so that women's safety is secured and girls have a truly fair playing field. Pepper Jackson and her mother, Heather Jackson, are represented by the American Civil Liberties Union and Lambda Legal. So it just goes on and on. There are more and more cases where these transgenders are participating in female sports, and they're performing much better in those sports than they did as boy athletes in boy sports. As if there's any surprise there. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back with more feedback on this Monday morning in just a bit, so stay with us, please.
Serving Bethel, Hamburg, Birdsboro, and all of Berks County, this is News Talk 830, WEEU.
Well, that's a wrap for the first hour of feedback on this Monday morning. We'll be back with hour number two. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a bit.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back as we kick off hour number two of this Monday edition of Feedback, your on-air town square. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders, along with Sean Tansky here on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond. Our phone numbers, if you'd like to take part in the conversation, are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And you can also text us now. The text number is 484-650-3373. And, of course, you can still email us at the following address, feedback@830weeu.com. Were you aware of this whenever you invested in the stock market? I don't know if you do or not, if you invest in the stock market or not. I do, to a certain extent, but I wasn't aware that the Securities and Exchange Commission was doing this. But get a load of this. I got this from Fox News's website. Apparently, they're illegally collecting data of every citizen who invests in the stock market. Now, this is according to a new lawsuit that's been filed. The New Civil Liberties Alliance filed the suit last Tuesday against the SEC, claiming that the agency, through the Consolidated Audit Trail, or CAT program, is collecting mass amounts of personally identifiable data by forcing brokers, exchanges, clearing agencies, and alternative trading systems to capture and send detailed information on every investor's trades in U.S. markets to a centralized database. The agency is doing so, NCLA says, without authorization from Congress and is in violation of the Fourth Amendment, which prohibits unreasonable government search and seizure of private information. Conceived during the Obama administration with bipartisan support within the commission, this CAT program is a multi-billion dollar self-appropriated fund. It's powered by various fees the SEC has collected through investment transactions, NCLA says. The group calls it completely unlawful and says it puts Americans' financial data at grave risk. By seizing all financial data from all Americans who trade in the American exchanges, SEC arrogates surveillance powers and appropriates billions of dollars without a shred of congressional authority, all while putting American savings and investments at grave and perpetual risk, said Peggy Little, who's NCLA Senior Litigation Counsel. She went on to say this class action complaint challenges SEC's shocking arrogation of power to impose dystopian surveillance, suspicionless seizures, and real or potential searches on millions of American investors. She told Fox News Digital that the SEC collects and stores in its database every trade information on every investor's trades from inception to completion, naming funds like 401k or 529 Education Fund, for example. And there is simply no law that permits them to do it. And the Fourth Amendment forbids them to do that, she says. And here's the dirty little truth, she says. All investing Americans will pay for this because it's paid for by fees that the SROs, or self-regulatory organizations, extract from the brokerage houses, who charge their customers. She says, I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar tax on American investors and American investing, and nobody ever voted for it. A spokesperson for the SEC told Fox News Digital that the commission undertakes its regulatory responsibilities consistent with its authorities. In an op-ed published last Monday in the Wall Street Journal, former Attorney General William Barr argued that even when the government seeks information about a citizen from banks, phone companies, and others with whom he's done business, the government is not free to vacuum this up carte blanche. Barr noted that the crux of the SEC's argument for the CAT program is that it could investigate things more easily if it weren't limited to gathering investor information on a case-by-case basis after suspected wrongdoing took place. But the whole point of the Fourth Amendment is to make the government less efficient by making it jump through hoops when it seeks to delve into private affairs, Barr wrote in his op-ed piece. For an agency to argue that it should be able to avoid these hoops to make investigations easier is to assert that it should be exempt from the Fourth Amendment, Bill Barr wrote in his op-ed piece. I certainly wasn't aware of that. So every time you delve into the stock market, yeah, your information is being tracked on this database that the SEC is maintaining. Well, taking a little look at some foreign affairs, or let's say international issues now. Let's start off with the Palestinian president and a comment that he made over the weekend after the United States vetoed a UN resolution to allow Palestine to become a member state of the UN Security Council. This I got from Axios. Mahmoud Abbas is the president of Palestine. He said Saturday that the Palestinian Authority will reevaluate its relations with the United States after the U.S. vetoed the Palestinians' bid to become a full member state at the United Nations. The practical implications of Abbas's statement are unclear, reports Axios. But it's the harshest criticism of U.S. policy he has expressed since President Biden assumed office. The U.S. on Thursday voted no and vetoed a U.N. Security Council resolution to accept Palestine as a full member of the U.N. Ahead of the vote, the Biden administration pressed Abbas and his advisors to not move forward with their bid. But the Palestinian president rejected those requests. Like all other leaders around the world, they're ignoring President Biden. Abbas told the official Palestinian news agency WAFA on Saturday that the hostile positions taken by the current administration, Biden administration that is, have generated unprecedented anger among the Palestinian people and the region's populations, potentially pushing the region towards further instability, chaos, and terrorism. He said Palestinian leadership will reconsider its bilateral relations with the U.S. to ensure the protection of Palestinian interests and rights. So there's another example of unrest in the world caused by something that the Biden administration has done. Oh, and then there's this. I wasn't going to mention this until I saw this article while preparing for today's show. I got this out of the Washington Examiner. The president is catching flack from Papua New Guinea after implying his uncle was eaten by cannibals in the country during World War II. On Wednesday, Biden told a story of how his uncle, Ambrose Finnegan, was shot down while flying a reconnaissance mission around Papua New Guinea back in World War II, crashing in an area infested with cannibals. The story contradicted all records about Finnegan's crash, which found that he actually crashed in the ocean due to engine failure. He also claimed a new search had found pieces of the plane when he visited the country, which he never did. Speaking of Biden, that is. The remarks have caused yet another diplomatic incident with a strategic Pacific nation. Here we go again with this president. Many residents and academics said Biden's comments played into bigoted assumptions about the country, particularly that it's a backward island nation populated by cannibals. The Melanesian group of people, who Papua New Guinea is part of, are a very proud people, Michael Kabuni, a lecturer in political science at the University of Papua New Guinea, told The Guardian. He went on to say, and they would find this kind of characterization very offensive. Not because someone says, oh, there used to be cannibalism in PNG. Yes, we know that. That's a fact, says Mr. Kabuni. But taking it out of context and implying that your uncle jumps out of a plane and somehow we think it's a good meal is unacceptable, he added. They wouldn't just eat any white men that fell from the sky. Anyway, economics lecturer Malupa Lavelle with the University of Papua New Guinea said that Biden's remarks were likely to make already strained relations between the country and the United States worse. You know, how many times do I have to read stories about other countries whose relations with the United States have worsened since this president took office? Biden caused a diplomatic rift last year when he canceled a visit to the country, interpreted by many as a slight. It paints PNG in a bad light. PNG has already had a lot of negative press around riots and tribal fighting, and this doesn't help. And the claims are unsubstantiated, Lavelle said of Biden's cannibal remarks. She went on to say, for a U.S. president to say that, particularly after a lot of deals have been struck with PNG and the work they've been doing in the Pacific, even off the cuff, I don't think that should have been said at all. And I agree wholeheartedly. I'm telling you, if we get a new president in the White House come January, they're going to have a lot of mess to pick up and clean up. GOP lawmakers are criticizing far-right colleagues, one of my favorites too, who want to oust the current House Speaker. This I got from The Hill. Representative Mike Lawler, a Republican from New York, blamed Representative Matt Gaetz, a Republican from Florida, and seven useful idiots, his words, not mine, for turmoil in the House, saying Thursday their success in ousting former Speaker Kevin McCarthy last fall is a direct cause of today's problems for Speaker Mike Johnson. Lawler criticized members of his own party for weakening Johnson's negotiation powers in the battle over aid to Ukraine and Israel, which is moving through the House, which moved through the House last week over the objections of some conservatives. Some of those folks had nobody to blame but themselves for why Speaker Johnson's hand in negotiations had been weakened, Lawler told CNN's Anderson Cooper during his Thursday night appearance on AC360. It's their actions that have done it, Lawler said. He went on to say, I look at this very simply. In October, the House was thrown into chaos by Matt Gaetz and seven useful idiots that teamed up with him within the Republican conference and 208 Democrats. You might recall McCarthy was booted from his speakership last fall when Gaetz and seven other House GOP members voted with Democrats to remove the California Republican from his post, a move that paralyzed the lower chamber for 3 weeks. And now they're back at it again. All right, we're going to take a break and then we'll take your phone calls in just a bit when feedback, your on-air town square, continues on this Monday morning.
Serving Paoli, Glenmore, Coatesville, and all of Chester County, this is News Talk 830, WEEU.
Bit of heart coming out of that commercial break there for you here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, as feedback continues. And don't forget, tomorrow during the 10 o'clock hour, U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. will be my guest. That's tomorrow here on Feedback. All right, let's go to the phones right now. Bob in Leesport is on the line. Bob, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Hey, good morning. Hey, you know, you're right. First of all, to tack that weather, that hurricane forecast on your bulletin board and come back to check it again later, because Rush Limbaugh coined the term drive-by media, and that's what they do. They put these stories out there, and they never come back to say, you know, were we right or wrong? And do you remember Putin was dead? Did you remember that?
Oh,
story?
Yes, I do remember that.
About
six
months ago, maybe more. And yeah, and it was his double walking around and everything like that. Have you ever heard the press say we were wrong? That was a foolish.
Oh my goodness! If they do say it, it's buried way back in the newspaper or at the end of their broadcast.
So, yeah, you're right. You're right to take it with a grain of salt. But, yeah, my issue has to do with that report about those five girls in the shot put stepping aside. And, I applaud them for doing it. They are self-sacrificing themselves for the sake of political correctness in this world. You know, those girls don't deserve to have to be subjected to this kind of false competition with gender dysphoric males who want to compete, some of them not even having surgeries, but they obviously have been born with physical attributes that are better than what the girls are able to have as far as muscle and so forth. And you know, a majority of children who say they are gender confused grow out of those feelings by adulthood. I don't know if you read that research that was done in the Netherlands, in which they tracked 2,700 individuals from age 11 up to their mid-20s who were periodically surveyed on how dissatisfied they were with their gender. They called it gender, non-contentedness, I believe. But anyway, those kids, as they went through, by the time they were adults, a lot more, I think it was like 7 or 10% before they were adults, thought that they were another gender. It's that kind of gender confusion and experimenting and trying to understand who you are is common among kids. And then only a minority of about 2% reported that similar feeling later as an adult. So why do scholastic sanctioned track and field competitions and other sports competitions insist on reinforcing these mental illnesses and promote these gender dysphoric athletes to be allowed to compete against girls? I think that, that's not only unfair, but it ruins those girls' chance to compete and have real records on the books. Those girls who stepped aside have now abrogated their right to compete against other girls in a fair competition. You know, I think this is a time for some maybe Christian and Catholic association of track and field to step in and invite kids from other schools, public schools, to come, and so that they can actually compete against just their gender and find out, you know, who has the best records among those schools. I know it would be, you stop and think about the actual record that's on there, it would be the transgender boy. He's got the competition record because there's got to be an asterisk aside of what he did because nobody else competed. But that's where we're headed. We've got to stop as a society playing their games and pretending that the emperor has clothes when he doesn't. That's what it's like. We're pretending that something that's not real is. And quite frankly, I grow tired of it.
Well, I got to wonder, where are these women rights groups that are out there that become mum when it comes to this issue? I mean, your Gloria Steinems, for instance, and others who claim they are for women's rights. Well, what about the rights of these young girls? Don't they have the right to compete and compete against other females and become successful in sports themselves? I'm reading too many examples of transgenders who start out in boys' sports, and they fail at it, and then they become, supposedly identify as a female and compete in female sports and become successful. That's just not right.
No, I agree with you there, and, you know, it's because they're afraid of taking the criticism. You know, once a whole culture gets on this woke trend of saying that what's real or what's unreal is real, you pay a price for standing against it. Look at what K.J. Rowling, or I forget her name, who wrote the Harry Potter.
Yeah, J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling, yeah. She has taken the heat and been excoriated in the press as being a hater and everything else just because she speaks the truth. And so that's what happens. You pay a price for that. And if you think you can ride the wave of popularity on it, you're like Joe Biden, who changes his mind and flip-flops to what he thinks is popular at the moment. But what's popular today may be proven to be historically inaccurate, and who knows? I mean, he needs as many constituents as he can get. His constituent groups, because the blacks are beginning to have a different point of view, black residents in cities are realizing that illegal immigrants are getting most of the attention. And so he's losing slowly some of the members of that constituent group. He needs a new constituent group, of course, that's illegal immigrants. And notice whenever they talk about migration, like that story they had for Chicago, the woman says, we need to take care of all of the different groups. No, the government doesn't have to take care of any of the groups. That's not the government's job. Government is not God or the economy. You have to be responsible as an individual and do your best to provide for your family. Yes, government can help and give you maybe some assistance with food stamps and so forth. But we just kill incentive when it comes to making housing available without any cost. But, yeah, I know we have a housing problem. It's a tough situation what to do. But I think if there were as many jobs as the Biden administration claims there are out there, people would be better able to afford a livelihood that could support them.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Bob, thanks for your call today.
Yeah, okay. I was all over the place. I'm sorry.
No. I appreciated talking with you today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more feedback in just a bit. Stay with us.
Serving Myerstown, Fredericksburg, Newmanstown, and all of Lebanon County. This is News Talk 830, WEEU.
And now back to feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, here on the voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, where if you want to take part in the conversation, you can do so multiple ways. In fact, by calling us at 610-374-8800 or toll-free 888-401-0459, by texting us at 484-650-3373, or by emailing us at feedback at 830weeu.com. See, it's not all that difficult to share your opinion with us. Either way, we welcome your input on the topics of the day. Well, this I got from NBC, and it doesn't surprise me one bit. NBC News has come out with a new national poll, and it shows that the share of voters who say they have high interest in this election has hit a nearly 20-year low at this point in the presidential race. Majorities holding negative views, excuse me, I'm losing my voice today, so bear with me. Majorities are holding negative views of both President Biden and former President Trump. The poll also shows Biden trimming Trump's previous lead to just 2 points in a head-to-head contest, an improvement within the margin of error compared to the previous survey, as Biden bests Trump on the issues of abortion and uniting the country. Wait a minute. Uniting the country? Where has he done that in the last 3 years? Somebody please tell me how he has united this country, what he's done to unite this country. While Trump is ahead on competency and dealing with inflation, and it finds inflation and immigration topping the list of most important issues facing the country, as just one-third of voters give Biden credit for an improving economy. But what also stands out in this survey by NBC News is how the low voter interest and the independent candidacy of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. could scramble what has been a stable presidential contest with more than 6 months until Election Day. While Trump holds a two-point edge over Biden head-to-head, Biden leads Trump by 2 points in a five-way ballot contest, including Kennedy and other third-party candidates. Democratic pollster Jeff Horwitt of Hart Research Associates, who conducted the survey with Republican pollster Bill McInturff of Public Opinion Strategies, said the following in this NBC piece. Americans don't agree on much these days, but nothing unites the country more than voters' desire to tune this election out. Amen, brother. The poll was conducted April 12th to the 16th during yet another turbulent time in American politics, including the beginning of Trump's criminal trial in New York and new attacks and heightened tensions in the Middle East. According to this poll, 64% of registered voters say they have high levels of interest in November's election, registering either a 9 or a 10 on a 10-point scale of interest. That's lower than what the NBC News poll showed at this time in the 2008, 2012, 2016, and 2020 presidential contests. The question dates to the 2008 election cycle, the lowest level of high election interest in the poll during a presidential cycle was in March of 2012, when it came in at only 59%. But it quickly ticked up in the next survey. This election cycle, high interest has been both low and relatively flat for months, according to the poll. I wonder why. McInturff, the Republican pollster, says the high level of interest in the poll has always been a signal for the level of turnout for a presidential contest. And I'm still, and I'll eat my words if this isn't true, if this doesn't come to fruition. But I'll bet you the turnout level in November is going to be on the low side. It makes it very hard for us to predict turnout this far in advance of November, he said. But every signal is turnout will be a lower percentage of eligible voters than that in 2020, McInturff said. By party, the current poll shows 70% of self-identified Republicans saying they have high interest in the coming election, compared with 65% of Democrats who say so. Independents are at 49%. While only 36% of voters aged 18 to 34 rate themselves as highly interested in this election. Well, Hillary Clinton had to chime in. She appeared on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and she had advice for voters who are upset about a Trump-Biden rematch. Here's what she said on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Biden versus Trump. We know that.
It is.
What do you say to voters who are upset that those are the two choices?
Get over yourself. Those are the two choices.
Yeah, love that.
Right? And you know, it's kind of like one is old and effective and compassionate, has a heart and really cares about people. And one is old and has been charged with 91 felonies.
Interesting.
I don't understand why this is even a hard choice, really. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But we have to go through the election, and hopefully people will realize what's at stake, because it's an existential question. What kind of country we're going to have, what kind of democracy we're going to have. And people who blow that off are not paying attention, because it's not like Trump, his enablers, his empowerers, his allies are not telling us what they want to do. I mean, they're pretty clear about what kind of country they want.
Oh, that's Hillary trying to stay relevant in this political world today. By the way, here she's poking fun at the ages of the two presidential candidates. She's only a year younger than Trump, by the way. She's 76 years old. But anyway, she went on. She also appeared in a podcast. Here's what she said in a podcast. She said she believes that when it comes to the rematch between the 81-year-old Biden and Trump, she still backs the effective and compassionate current president, despite his age, who wants to maintain our democracy. Trump, on the other hand, Clinton believes would be an autocrat in the model of Vladimir Putin, or a dictator the likes of Kim Jong-un, while also being old, as she put it. She says Trump was just gaga over Putin because Putin does what Trump would like to do. kill his opposition, imprison his opposition, drive journalists and others into exile, rule without any check or balance. Let's see, is he the president whose Justice Department is having all these charges filed against his opponent? But I digress. That's what Trump really wants, she says. Those are the people he's modeling himself after. And we've been down this road in our, you know, world history. We sure don't want to go down that again, says Hillary. Clinton contrasted Biden with Trump by saying that he wants to maintain our democracy. He'll abide by the results of a fair and free election. They say Joe Biden is old. I say you're right, she said. Joe Biden is old. He's also effective, compassionate. He cares about people. Except for the cannibals down there in New Guinea. Donald Trump is old, and he's got 91 federal criminal indictments against him, she said. A Trump campaign spokesperson told the Washington Examiner in a statement that Clinton was delusional. Hillary continues to suffer from Trump derangement syndrome and can't seem to accept the results of the 2016 election. So she's now trying to tell herself lies in addition to trying to gaslight the American people into believing her own warped and perverted views. Poll after poll has shown that Americans are more worried about Biden's age than Trump's, according to this Daily Mail article. Only 38% of likely 2024 voters believe President Biden will be alive at the end of another four-year term. That's according to an exclusive poll for DailyMail.com from early April. And that means one thing. Vice President Kamala Harris is just as likely to be in the top job as Biden come January 2029 if he wins re-election. Some 36% of likely voters believe Harris will be president at the end of the term, the exact same proportion as think Biden will be in the job. The results show how the 81-year-old president's age will be a major factor this November when voters pick the commander-in-chief they want for the next 4 years. Donald Trump is only 4 years younger, but voters harbor fewer doubts about Trump. More than half say they're confident he will make it through a full term, with 34% saying they have doubts. Either way, the results show how Republicans and Democrats will have to weigh up not just their choice of president, but also consider who's likely to step into the breach if ill health, or worse, incapacitates the leader of the free world. That's from the Daily Mail there in the United Kingdom. Then there's this from Politico. As the president steps up his efforts to reach out to the Hispanic community, as warning signs flash, according to Politico. So here's what they're reporting. Mr. Biden has largely shied away from lengthy sit-downs with national news outlets, but he made an exception for Univision last week. The interview with the Hispanic media giant wasn't just a tit-for-tat with Donald Trump, who had appeared on the network months prior. It was an implicit admission from Biden that he has to do more to reach Hispanic voters who have soured on him. Biden's campaign is ramping up efforts to reach this highly important group of voters. The campaign has placed ads on ESPN Deportes and La Liga to reach Latino voters tuning in to catch soccer games. Both Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris conducted a slew of Hispanic media interviews during respective swings out west last month. And the campaign has begun using a new app called Reach to connect with Latino voters. I think that Latino voters know how much is at stake, says Michelle Villegas, the Biden campaign's Latino engagement director, who went on to say, but there is an information gap. Our job on this campaign is to reach folks and connect the dots. Well, aides note that they launched their Hispanic outreach operation, Latinos Con Biden-Harris, much earlier than past Democratic presidential campaigns, including Biden's 2020 run. But fellow Democrats also see the early spending and intensifying outreach as the reelection team getting serious about a potentially fatal political problem. This is Politico reporting this now. Biden won 63% of Hispanic voters in 2020, And though there are few high-quality polls taken of Latino voters, some Democrats have worried that Hispanic voters are moving away from the party, including in key battleground states. The president himself laid out the stakes during a recent trip to Arizona, where he said the following, "I need you badly. I need the help." This is Biden speaking. "You're the reason why, in large part, I beat Donald Trump," referring back to the 2020 election. Well, there's also the risk that Biden could lose some Latino votes to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. One poll from Democratic group Equus Research showed that Kennedy, who benefits from his name recognition, performing surprisingly well among Latino voters in a dozen battleground states. If Kennedy gets on the ballot in those states, particularly Arizona and Nevada, it poses another challenge to the Biden campaign's Latino voter operation. The third party candidate factor plays a really important role here. It's not just Biden versus Trump for Latino voters, Prielli says. And there's also a very real appeal to Latino voters to stay home. There are very active interests at play in trying to demobilize this space. Aides insist that they're on top of the matter. One of the ways they're doing so is by micro-targeting their approach. As part of a $30 million spring media buy, the campaign has used a mix of Spanish-language accents as well as Spanglish, which is more resonant with young Latino voters. In Allentown, for instance, which is home to a sizable Puerto Rican community, they've run ads delivered in a Puerto Rican accent. They've released ads targeted to Cuban and Venezuelan populations in Florida and Mexican voters in Nevada and Arizona. So it shows just how concerned the president is about this particular group of Latino voters. All right, let's go to the phones right now. John in Wyomissing wants to weigh in. John, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bill. How are you?
Fine. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Hey, I wanted to circle back to something that you implied earlier. You said, you know, something about Joe Biden sicking his Justice Department on Donald Trump, you know, in an effort to impact the election, it sounds like. And I guess my question is, do you think that Jack Smith's case is a political case?
Well,
and should Donald Trump, you know, pay a price for what he did after the election and on January 6th?
Well, in the next hour, I'm going to have answers for you. So stick around. What else,
cool.
What else did you want to talk about? Because I only have 2 minutes here.
Well, you know, maybe I'll ask you about a couple of your bumpers. WEEU has been playing this bumper that says, it's Dan Bongino saying, hey, President Trump's going to be the first president to win three elections, which you mentioned gaslighting. Not only is it gaslighting, it's just ignorant of the fact that FDR won four consecutive elections.
Yeah, let me.
And is the only president.
Yeah, let me answer this for you, but wait, because we're running out of time, John, so I want to answer your question. Those promos were put together by the network that runs Bongino's show. We don't have any say over that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, to say in your email to me that we're helping to elect Trump or whatever it was you said is not true.
I mean, telling people that he won the 2020 election, if you don't think that helps elect Trump, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners believe that he won the 2020 election.
When you
repeat that message over and over again,
John,
yeah,
John, as I just got done saying, your argument is with Bongino and the network that airs his show, not with us. We don't have any say over what promos they write. We have to run those promos because we air their show.
Sure, I'm just saying you're contributing to the gaslighting that's happening around the election by saying that Trump won 2020. It's absurd.
All right. What else? What other argument did you have? Because we're running out of time.
I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just trying to, you know, point out that a lot of people don't think that the J6 prosecution is political.
Why then did they hide their documents from the Republicans when the Republicans took over the House?
Jack Smith did?
No, not Jack Smith. The J6 Commission. The J6 committee.
I'm talking about the Jack Smith prosecution, not the committee.
Oh, I thought you just said the J6 committee. I beg your pardon.
No. I mean the prosecution for what happened on January 6th.
All right, but I'm going to have an answer.
The one that you implied was political.
Yeah, I'm going to have an answer for you in the next hour with some other stories I'm going to share.
I'll be listening with bated breath, Bill.
All right, buddy. You take care. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. And I'm not and John, I'm not arguing with you either. I love to debate, but I love to debate.
I love to debate too, and I love your show. You know, I wouldn't listen to it, if I didn't like to drive myself a little nuts, you know.
All right, buddy, take her easy.
All right, cheers, Bill.
Bye-bye now. We'll be back in just a bit. Stay with us.
News, weather, and traffic.
It's a source I can trust.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
Well, that'll do it for hour number two of this edition of Feedback. We'll be back with the third and final hour, if my voice will hold out. It's all here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Thank you for making us part of your day today. Welcome back as we kick off the third and final hour of Feedback here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Good morning, everyone. I'm Bill Saunders along with Sean Tansky. And our phone number is here, 610-374-8800. We're toll-free, 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373 if you'd like to take part in the conversation. And don't forget, tomorrow, during the 10 o'clock hour, we'll have a special guest. U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. will be here on Feedback tomorrow during the 10 o'clock hour. So I hope you'll tune in for that. All right, with that said, let's go to the phones. Irene in Burnville wants to weigh in on immigration and the press. Immigration and the press. Good morning, Irene. How are you today?
All right. Hope you had a good weekend.
I did, if only my voice would come back.
I know you probably don't pay that much attention to the news, that the ABC News at the top of the hour, because I'm sure you're doing other things.
Oh, I'm paying. I have an ear tuned into it to a certain extent, yeah.
Well, my ear was only partly turned in, so maybe I heard it wrong. But they were saying about immigration going into from a country going into England, if I heard it right, and about the financial drain it's going to have on the country. I never heard the press make that comment about coming into the U.S.
Interesting. You're talking about the newscast that just happened, just aired?
I was like, that floored me, because I never heard it. It's a drain on our country.
Well, of course, in the media's mind, it's not.
I know, but it's another case of media bias.
Yeah, and that list gets longer and longer, doesn't it?
Of course. Can I make one other quick comment?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Watching Fox News this morning, and it's Lawrence Jones, I believe, on Fox.
Okay.
And I never saw him as upset as he was this morning. When they were playing a clip from Yale, and he said, how can they actually chant those, the chants from, because it was from the desegregation chants, you know, that was back in the 60s, like we will overcome, and I think that's one they were saying.
Was he referring to the protesters, the anti-Israel protesters that were on Yale's campus?
Yes. And he said, that is a travesty. Why are they doing that? Because it has nothing to do with, you know, desegregation or anything else.
And I'll bet the majority of the protesters up there in Yale are white.
Probably. But he, like I said, he was very upset about it.
Wow. I don't get Fox News at home, so I'm not familiar with what was said today.
Yeah, Lawrence Jones, he's a black journalist.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Because I stream now, I can watch CNN News because that is streamed on Max, which is one of the streaming services that I get. because the owner or the parent company for Max is the parent company for CNN too. So I get some cable news, but Fox News is not one of them.
Okay, I just thought I'd mention that because it really, for him to get that upset was something.
I'll have to check into that and see what the whole basis is of that, because I only picked up bits and pieces of the protests going on there in Yale and what's continuing to go on Columbia's campus. Oh, my, what a mess. And now the Columbia's president has advised all students to get their learning online to stay clear of the campus. Well, I mean, this has gotten out of hand, and I have to wonder if the president of Columbia is in control anymore.
I don't think so.
Doesn't seem that way, does it?
And I may be wrong, but I think a lot of them, they don't know what they're protesting for.
Well, it's the message of the day. It's the cool thing to do. To me, these young people are on the wrong side, or they'll find out eventually that they're on the wrong side of history.
Right, and you know, I just can't see any of the women wanting to wear a hijab if it comes down to it,
right,
and be denied all their rights.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even though they're being denied a lot of them in sports anyway.
Oh well. What can I tell you?
That's it.
All right, Irene, thanks for calling today. I appreciate it. I'll have to follow up on that story on Fox News and see what that was all about.
Okay, and somebody else heard that differently than I did. I appreciate it. You know, like I said, it was half an ear. It's just I heard at the end and was like, what?
And, of course, we record all of that, so I'll have to go back and listen to the recording then.
All right.
All right, Irene, thanks for calling in.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye now. 610-374-8800, toll-free, 888-401-0459. And our dedicated text line is 484-650-3373. Let's go back to the phones. Pablo in Redding is on the line. Pablo, good morning. Welcome to Feedback today.
Good morning. I just wanted to say I went to the movies, just me and one of my sister from Florida.
Uh-huh.
She's here. Just to let you know, she goes to the right. She wanted to see this movie, Civil War. So we went. It scared me.
Really? In what way?
It really did. There was parts there that it could happen. I don't want to give it away with people who might go see it, but they had characters there that looked like Biden and the ex-president and Obama. You know, they tweak it not to look like it is, but it is. And it's just weird, a Civil War with our weapons now is very scary and stuff. They try not blame it on the way they did it. They're not blaming the right or the left or the Hispanic or the Asians or this and that. But they had all kinds of things to lead to those things. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And basically Texas, Florida, you know, anything's going to a red state against, like, California to fight Texas or type thing, and I don't want to give away what state lost and this and that, and then they use some kind of weapons we shouldn't be using against our own people, and it was just shocking. It could, something like that could happen here.
This is the new movie by director Alex Garland.
Yeah, it's called Civil War.
Civil War, and according to what I'm reading here is, it imagines a third-term president ruling over a divided America and follows the journalist driving through the war-torn countryside on a mission to land his final interview. That's the excerpt that I've got here online about this movie.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever have time, watch it. It's kind of scary and stuff. Very scary.
Wow.
And the lady who was just talking just before me about listening to the news in your station, I heard it too. But it was over in England. They want to take a lot of the illegal aliens. They're passing some weird law in England to send them to somewhere in Africa, some country in Africa. Just ship them over there and let them deal with it.
So is what she heard, because she thought it was England, and
yeah,
she said that the anchor said that to alleviate the financial burden or something like that.
Yeah, the financial burden of the English people. They're spending, I don't know, whatever that pound is, how much is pounds over there, but yeah, and then with a lot of the illegal aliens were doing, throwing their passport overboard, not like that. They won't know what country they came from, like that. They won't send them back to their country. But now they're going to solve that to just ship them all out to somewhere in some African country.
So Irene did hear that correctly then.
It was in your newscast and stuff. But, yeah, I heard it too, and I was like, wow. Then if that's happening over there, what you can imagine was happening here coming over the border, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and her point, what she was saying is, you don't hear any reporter saying what a financial burden the illegal migrant situation is having on our country.
Yeah, I think you see New York, yeah, I'm living in a hotel for like blah, 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 and getting all this good, and I'm not paying for it, you know what I mean? Getting a phone, getting food stamps, getting American insurance. I don't get none of that stuff, and I'm paying for it for these people to take it.
Incredible. Paul Blow, thank you. I appreciate you weighing in today.
All right, have a great day. It's always a pleasure listening to you and hearing you and talking to you.
Well, it's always a pleasure talking with you as well, pal. Thanks
right.
for calling in today.
Go Eagles. Go every Pennsylvania team. But right now, the way things are, our Flyers are gone. Boom. And everything else. Hopefully the Phillies do something soon.
Well, look at how well the Phillies have been doing.
See, in my house, we got Yankee fans and Philly fans. I'm a Philly fan, and my fiance, she's a New York fan, and we have battles all the time. I can just tell you, she goes, your team lost. I'm like, you know, I love you, right? But you're sleeping in the couch. Yeah. All right, my friend.
Pablo, take her easy, buddy. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Pottsville and speak with Roy today. Roy, how are you today?
Hey, Bill, what's going on?
Not too much. How about with yourself?
I'm doing great. Before I say what I was going to say, I heard you mention a few weeks ago before you took off on your birthday that you had an executive producer, and it was a guy that I used to work with a long time ago when I was in the radio back in the late 70s in Warminster.
Daryl Berger?
Yeah, Daryl Berger. That's right.
Yeah, Daryl Berger worked for a radio station in Lansdale, not too far from
Warminster. Yeah, WNPV.
Yeah. And he's now here working. Let's just say he's working as an independent contractor for us. And
if you talk to Bill Berger and talk to him about a blind guy he used to work with at WCSD, he'll know exactly who you're talking about.
Well, he might even be listening right now, so he's probably hearing you say that, Roy. But I'll bring that up with him. He's very rarely here in this building, but one of his responsibilities is to help me get people to interview on the show.
Right. He's a good guy.
Oh, yeah. He and I used to work together, in fact, many, many years ago.
Right.
So, what year did you know him?
This was back in the late 70s till about 1982.
Okay. All right.
It was a non-commercial high school station in Warminster, PA, WCSD. And the main thing he would know me for is that I did an 89-hour marathon on that station. I stayed on the air for 89 hours.
Oh, my word. Wow, Roy. I can't imagine how you did that.
Now that I'm older, I can't imagine how I did it either, but I did.
Oh my, I can't even make it through a 3-hour show without having to take a nap.
I even have recordings of it too.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
How about that? That's incredible. Well, I'll text Daryl after I'm off the air here, and remind him of you. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome. And what I called about was the lady did hear right. The British are taking these illegal immigrants, and they are having a drain on their economy, and there's an election coming up there, the report said, and they're sending them to Rwanda.
How about that? Okay.
If I were an illegal alien wanting to go to England, a place that's free and all that stuff and has great sending me to Rwanda would not make me happy.
Yeah, wouldn't me either, buddy. Well, thanks for verifying that, because she was wondering if she heard that right.
Oh, yeah, she heard it right. And they talked about the drain on the economy and how it's going to be a big issue in the election over there coming up. I'm thinking, wow, this is the United States, too.
Oh, wow. All right, Roy, it was a pleasure talking with you today. I appreciated the call today.
Pleasure talking to you, too, Bill.
All right, you take her easy now. Bye-bye. We're going to continue with taking your calls in just a bit, but I got to take care of a little bit of business first. You're listening to Feedback on this Monday morning right here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU.
Serving Barnesville, Schuylkill Haven, Tremont, and all of Schuylkill County, this is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Welcome back to Feedback. Let's go to the phones again. Let's go to Matt in Shillington. Matt, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning to you, Bill. First, I must admit, I laugh each time I hear that promo where Bongino claims that if Trump wins in November, he will have won three elections. You know, it just reminds me that Bongino, like Rush Limbaugh, is an entertainer, not a news source. So I look at that promo, Bill, sort of like, you know, a tease for someone to consider listening to his show for further entertainment. I don't think anyone is on the fence anymore about the 2020 election. I don't know about you. I don't recall the last time a caller on this show suggested that Trump won the 2020 election. So, you know, I'd like to think that that is a reflection on the intelligence of the Feedback listening audience. But, Bill, if anyone is still on the fence, you probably have seen this book on this matter. I'll refer them to the book titled Disproven, written by Ken Block. Who is Ken Block? He is a voter fraud expert who was hired by the Trump campaign in November 2020 to locate voter fraud. Block states unequivocally the 2020 presidential election was not stolen, and there's no evidence of voter fraud sufficient to change the outcome of the election. He owns a Bill Simpatico software system, and in the book it says his company's findings were communicated directly to then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, and transcripts from the January 6th Select Committee investigating the Capitol show the campaign found no evidence of voter fraud sufficient to change anything. So, Bill, when it comes to whom to believe, Dan Block or Dan Bongino, let me just say that's a no-brainer. And, Bill, as your friend, I want to caution you here. When John from Wyomissing said he will be taking notes on things you say during this 11 o'clock hour, Bill, let me confirm he's not joking, since I saw him take notes on everything I said during a semester of honors government. So please, sir, be careful with that. Hey, my main topic, a big drama on Friday. I'm sure you caught it as well. And I think a little bit of a shock. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson did a 180 and said he doesn't care about his job security as speaker. He said now there's no doubt in his mind the United States must continue to send military aid to Ukraine. And so as a result, I think it was Friday night, Bill, he orchestrated separate votes on Ukraine, Israel, and I believe to Taiwan. All of them passed, and they required a certain number of Democrats to vote for it as well. So today's paper, or I guess it was even yesterday, I call them the flamethrowers, but his critics on the right, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, said that they're calling for Johnson to resign, or she will call a motion to vacate the speaker's chair. And, Bill, I think Johnson packaged everything into one large bill to send to the Senate, and Senate approval is expected this week with President Biden set to sign it. So I could be wrong, my friend, but I think we're going to have more drama coming up on the House side of the Congress in the next couple of weeks. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. Did you catch anything related to that at all?
Oh, yeah. And you want to add to it? In fact, I wanted to get your assessment of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Paul Gomar. What are your thoughts of those two?
I've never been a fan of Greene. Like I said, I use the term flamethrower for her and Matt Gaetz. They're more interested in getting their way and the idea of compromising. Nothing. They don't seem to want anything to do with it. Did you say, was it Paul Gosar?
Gomar. G-O-M-A-R. Uh-huh.
I'm not quite familiar. What's his first name, Bill? I'm sorry.
Paul Gomar.
I'm not quite familiar with that. Please help me. Is he a chair of one of the House committees? Let's see here.
I can't remember what state he is from. Why do I want to say Arizona? But I'm probably wrong there. But he's part of that far-right group of Republicans. And he was the second one to fall in line with Marjorie Taylor Greene. In calling for Johnson's ouster.
They're going to be true to their word. We are probably going to see a motion to vacate pretty soon. The only reason I'm sorry you asked that, I can now picture John from Wyomissing writing down, Matt from Shillington doesn't know all the members of Congress. So, thanks again, Bill. Have a good day.
You too, Matt. Appreciated the call today. And let's stay on the phones. In fact, let's go to New Jersey, Atlantic City, and talk with my buddy Alex down there. Alex, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Bill. How about yourself?
Fine. It's good to hear from you.
Always a pleasure. I do listen. I don't always call. I want to bring up, I was listening to a podcast with two fellas, an ex-senator, I think his name was Talent, and a former naval Pentagon officer. And they were talking about the state of the United States Navy. I don't know if I wasn't aware of it, and I find it somewhat frightening considering the state of the world. The Chinese outnumber us in ships 3-1. In other words, for every ship we have, they have three.
Wow.
They also, as far as Biden wants to decrease our fleet of 292 ships by another 50 ships, and which will be the lowest, I think, probably since before World War II. Even under Clinton, who always had the reputation for cutting the military, the Navy was at 356. China, and I keep going to China, they have the capability in one of their shipyards to outbuild ships rapidly. Just one of their shipyards can build ships more quickly than all of the shipyards that we have that are active. We shut down a lot of them. Philadelphia comes to mind.
Right.
I just have to wonder what fantasy land. Look, I rail against the military-industrial complex all the time, but I am for national security. I have to wonder what fantasy land the White House lives in, where they just don't see anything as a threat, and they just, you know, they're more concerned. In recent meetings with our ambassador to Japan, I forget the fellow's name, but I think Ron Emanuel it might be, where he was more concerned, the Japanese wanted to talk about defense, and he was talking about going green and promoting LGBTQ rights. So seems the White House is more concerned about pronouns than anything else. I find it frightening, Bill. I don't know about you, but our Navy is so stretched thin as it is, and the idea you could cut it more, to me, is beyond belief.
Well, it's not just the Navy. I mean, go back to the height of the COVID pandemic and how many of our military service were let go simply because they refused to get the vaccine. Now you've got the Strategic Petroleum Reserve that is extremely low, and they can't fill it back up now because of the price of a barrel of oil today. You've got not only, as you mentioned, we are extremely low in the number of naval vessels that we have compared to our adversaries, but now our artillery is at a low stockpile because of everything we're sending over to Ukraine. And they actually wanted to cut the military budget this year, if my memory serves me right.
So, exactly. And the thing of it is that, you know, I'm not pounding the drum. I always say every time we send arms and money overseas to fight wars to different countries, the people who run these defense contracting companies, they're planning on sending their kids to better private schools. So I'm not for just spending money on the military. But my goodness, Britain has cut their fleet. France has added a few ships. Japan is doing the best they can, even India. But I don't understand the thinking. The world's on fire, and these guys in the White House, like I said, are more worried about pronouns than anything else. So I'll put it to you this way, Bill. In the name of Uncle Bosey and the cannibals, we can't let our Navy deplete to anything.
Now, let me get – are you still with me?
Yeah, I'm here, Bill.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Alex. Do you think – this just came to my mind as you and I were talking. Do you think Putin may be extending this conflict with Ukraine in hopes that – we send as much materiel over to Ukraine to deplete our supplies so that that he's doing that on purpose so that our supplies are depleted? Do you think that that is a strategy that Putin is undertaking now?
Well, it would be no different than Reagan did to break the Soviet military when he went all in on Star Wars, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
So it's an old strategy. And, you know, Putin is a nationalist. He's a romantic nationalist. I don't like the guy. He's a thug. He's an autocrat. But that said, we, you know, NATO now has him boxed in Russia's northwest. But it's what with Ukraine, things are wide open down there. And I, you know, for all Trump's faults, and I'm not a big fan, he was right when he said, you know what, Europe, a lot of these conflicts are closer to you than us. You guys got to ante up. You can't continually depend on us, but they still do. And despite that, the Biden administration sees no problem getting rid of more military. It makes me scratch my head. And at the same time, I don't. If this continues, we're strategically in the world. We're in a bad way.
Alex, great stuff. I appreciate you sharing that with us today.
All right, Bill. You take care.
Good hearing from you again, okay?
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye now. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more of your calls. George and Carrie, stay with me. I'll get your calls right after we do a little bit of business here. You're listening to Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Stay with us.
Serving Tamaqua, Pottsville, Pine Grove, and all of Schuylkill County. This is News Talk 830 WEEU.
And now back to Feedback with Bill Saunders on 830 WEEU, the voice of Berks and Beyond.
Roy, if you're still listening, I just got a text from Daryl Berger who says he does remember you. He says he remembers you as doing weather at the radio station that you were talking about, and he said to say hi. So there you have it, Roy. All right, let's go back to the phones right now. Let's go to Schuylkill County and talk with Carrie this morning. Carrie, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. I just called to talk about this election because I have a totally different perspective on it. And I hear people saying they're not going to vote, and that just sets me going here. I stopped voting for Democrats several decades ago. And, you know, I just really think that everything they stand for today is evil. Abortion, sexualizing and mutilating children, teaching our kids to hate our country, teaching kids that people are racists, and politics of personal destruction. I mean, it's just all a negative thing to me. And I just can't vote for any of it. And I keep thinking that if people are going to stay home, they ought to think about, you know, when you're in a hole, you ought to stop digging. And if you want to get rid of the people who are bringing in the backhoes to dig it even deeper. So, you know, our country isn't going to fix itself. But if you want to put it on the right track, you have to get it off the wrong track to begin with. And, you know, I just look at it that way. I see they totally dislike Trump because he's pro-God, pro-family, pro-country, pro-individual liberty, pro-individual prosperity. He's pro-business and pro-life. The Democrats are against all of that. They fight it tooth and nail. And, you know, I just think we need to get a grasp on what's really going on in our country. People are voting for people or against people because of what they say. They don't like the way they look, you know, and so on and so on. And you got to look at the big picture because the minutia aren't going to make a big difference in the end. But the accumulation of minutia could just bring our country down even more than it is. And I urge people to get out and vote just to stop what on earth is going on right now. And so I hope they will consider doing that, you know, and just stop what's going on and start us down a different path. So,
Terry, that's a good message. I appreciate you sharing that with us. But and I share your concern. Clearly the answer isn't to stay home.
No, I don't think so. You can do it, but silence gives consent, you know. So if you're okay with what's going on, then you can stay home. But I think most people are not. So let's get out and get these people out of office.
So now how about let me ask you this, Gary, because I do like your message. But for people who don't like either one of the two major party candidates and they end up voting for a third party candidate and that leads to Biden being reelected, what would be your thoughts on that?
I would say we've had third parties for a long time, and voting for them does not send a message. If you want to send a message, write a letter. You know, voting for a third party isn't going to do anything for our country. It's a neutral thing, as far as I'm concerned. And if you really want to fix something, you have to get on board with getting people out who are doing bad things. And voting for people who might be better, and voting third party to me is like putting a post-it note on your front door with a little frowny face on it. It just doesn't accomplish anything.
So you're against third parties altogether?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
There may be a point where we have a third party, and I actually hope we do, but it isn't right now. So. I hope that people will think long and hard about this because staying home just isn't going to fix anything.
Carrie, I thank you for calling in and sharing that thought with us today.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, you're welcome. Bye-bye now. Let's go to Lancaster County and speak with George today. George, good morning. Welcome to Feedback.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Good morning to you. How are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad in spite of myself. You know, that's my standard response.
I was just going to say that. You answer the same way every time I ask how you're doing.
Yeah, if I could only get out of my own way, I'd do a whole lot better.
I hear you there, buddy.
Yeah, man. One thing, I will tell you this, though, something my father used to say all the time.
What's that?
Which I try to remember no matter how tough I think things are. He used to tell me exactly in German, Leben ist gut, heute ist ein schöner Tag. Which means life is good, today's a nice day.
I'm glad you gave the English translation of that, because I don't speak German.
Eat more sauerkraut, you might.
And I love sauerkraut.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I know Roy through a mutual endeavor called Amateur Radio. And he would know me as with a last three letters suffix as being buy more sauerkraut, buy more scrapple.
Oh, scrapple.
Yep.
Oh, you've hit on two food staples that I love.
You're my kind of guy, Bill.
Now, have you talked with Roy on ham radio, or have you met in person?
Many times. As a matter of fact, he agreed with a statement another blind ham once told me from Germany. The worst part about being blind is you can't see.
This is true.
Yeah, it is. Bill, I'm calling for one main reason, but I would like to agree with the previous young lady calling that I wish, well, maybe disagree. I wish the third parties could have a better say, but sometimes I think they are really not worth the effort. I'll give you two examples, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. They both ran for office years ago, and I couldn't help but wonder, you know, why are they wasting all the time, effort, and money to say something that I don't know what they were saying. I called today for a very specific reason to express some good news, good fortune that came my way. I'm sure you've heard of people going to a yard sale, an auction, flea market, whatever the case might be. They buy something for 50 cents, $5, and it's worth hundreds or more.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly that happened to me on Saturday. I went to Shawneck Fire Hose mud sale, where I saw many of my men and my friends, and was about to go home. I thought, well, it's making up my mind. I'll go in 5 minutes. Well, a picture frame came up for sale.
Okay.
For auction for $10. I couldn't see the picture. I was more interested in the frame. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll take it home with me, remove the print, and put in my own photography.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing led to the next. And I got it, paid a dollar for it. Brought it home, looked up the print and the artist. Title of the print is The World Forgotten by a painter named William Vanderblanc Burney. Well, in its present condition, it's worth over $100.
Oh, wow. And you only paid $1?
I swear to you on my life, so help me if I never say another word. $1.
Wow.
The hot dogs didn't even cost that. Were more expensive than that. With sauerkraut on top.
Oh, you lucked out this weekend.
Oh, man, I would tell you, if I got any luckier, I'd have my youth again. But at this age, I don't know if I could put up with it.
Now, you didn't go back to that location and tell the person who sold that to you that what it was really worth, did you?
Shoot, no. I was home. I got home. I was so tired from walking around all day on the hard surface, and on ground as well, and taking in all the sights and chatting up with a bunch of my Mennonite friends. I couldn't believe there must have been 75 of them, ranging in age from mid-60s all the way down to 5 months, and they're all funny.
Oh, wow. Well, you taught me. I gotta start going to some of these flea markets.
Put in a web search sometime for 2024 Lancaster County mud sales.
Mud
sales.
M-U-D. Mud sales.
Yeah.
Okay.
Soil and water makes mud.
Okay.
The next one I see here is Five Point Zill Auction. Five Point Zill Fire Company, Dry Tavern Road in Denver. Oh, just south of Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good one too. I will be going there by hook or crook, and it's really worth the time and effort.
Well, who knows? Maybe if I go, I can get a picture frame for $1 and find out that the the picture in it is worth a lot of money.
I tell you what, if you find my youth, I'll give you $100 for it.
All right, George, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to let you enjoy my company, too. See you.
Take care, buddy.
Bye.
And don't spend all that money in one place. Whatever. Oh, my. Oh, I wish I had that kind of luck. Man, oh, man. Even the few times I play the Pennsylvania lottery, at most I win, what, maybe $8 or so? But I never win a lot. Oh, well. I'm better off not gambling. We'll take a break. We'll be back with the final seconds of feedback in just a bit. Stay with us. This last hour shot right by.
Topics that matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.
The voice of Berks and Beyond.
Tomorrow, during the 10 o'clock hour, my guest will be U.S. Senator Bob Casey Jr. Stick around for that, okay? That's feedback here on The Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU. Thank you to everyone who called in, texted in, or wrote in your opinions. You folks are the stars of this show. And I appreciate you sharing your opinions with us on what's happening out there today. We'll do it again tomorrow. Want to thank my producer, Sean Tansky. Thank you, buddy.
No problem, Bill.
And I'll work with you again tomorrow, obviously.
Yeah, I hope so.
I hope so, too. Until tomorrow, make it a great rest of your day today. That'll do it for this episode of Feedback. To comment on the show, you can email us at feedback@830weeu.com. You can also hear our show live from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time at 830weeu.com or on the TuneIn app. For producer Sean Tansky, I'm Bill Saunders. Thanks for listening.